Nearly 200 years ago, the abolitionist William Lloyd Garrison of Boston wrote a public letter calling for the end of slavery, saying, quote, "On this subject, I do not wish to think or speak or write with moderation. No, no. Tell a man whose house is on fire to give a moderate alarm," end quote. It was that spirit that imbued his abolitionist newspaper, The Liberator, and others like it. And it's with that spirit that a team from the Boston Globe and Boston University is reviving the abolitionist newspaper tradition under the name of another paper from the era, The Emancipator. Here to discuss that with us is Professor Ibram X. Kendi, founding director of the BU Center for Anti-Racist Research and best-selling author of How to Be an Anti-Racist, also co-founder of The Emancipator. Also joined by Kimberly Atkins, senior opinion writer at the Boston Globe, inaugural columnist for The Emancipator, an author of its newsletter, as well as beloved former colleagues. So Kimberly, Professor Kendi, welcome back to Radio Boston to both of you. Ooh, do I have them? Professor Kendi, do I have you?
Yes, you have me. Hello.
Welcome. Welcome. And Kimberly, do I have you? So we might be having some trouble with Kimberly's sound. So Professor Kendi, I'm going to start with you. We talked with you on Radio Boston in July when you first launched Boston University's Center for Anti-Racist Research. Back then, you might remember, although you've done a million interviews since then, I know, we spoke about Boston, the city's history of racism, redlining, busing, professional sports. And even then you brought up in counterpoint this other history of Boston, the city's status as a beacon of the anti-slavery movement in the 19th century. Now we have the launching of the Emancipator in the tradition of the abolitionist newspapers.
Can you hear me now?
Tell us more about that tradition. Kimberly, we can hear you. Welcome. I'm just asking Professor Kendi to tell us a little bit more about the tradition of abolitionist newspapers.
Oh, well, it was just a critically important tradition, you know, from Boston and in other cities in which you had editors and journalists and writers and thinkers who came together to hasten the end of slavery through the written word. And so in many ways, these newspapers served as the voice, you know, of the abolitionist movement then. And you know, we're inspired by that to this day. And we see the way in which journalism, opinion journalism, you know, and scholarship can point the way forward to the abolition of racism.
Kimberly, what did you think when you first heard of this idea?
I thought that it was not only a great idea, but very much needed in the moment we were in. The idea for this project is actually why I left WBUR and rejoined the Boston Globe to be a part of it. Given the last couple of years and the protests that we've seen, the calls for racial justice, it seemed that just the same sort of journalism that sort of follows it and follows where it might go in terms of laws wasn't enough. There really needs to be a discussion that's more forward-looking, that's more broad thinking about what some of the solutions to the racism that are built in so many of our systems might be. And so the opportunity to bring together journalists and scholars and thought leaders and members of the community together to really flesh out and get to the root of not only where this racism lies, but ideas as to how to address them. It feels very much like the calls that were being made in these anti-slavery newspapers 200 years ago.
Kimberly, Professor Kendi a moment ago referred to opinion journalism and scholarship. I think you may have used that same phrase, opinion journalism, at one point. Clearly, this is journalism with a point of view and an approach on a social justice issue. Will this be pushing the envelope of journalism in new ways? Is this that we took a hiatus from a kind of journalism that 200 years ago was widely embraced and accepted? As a journalist, how do you think about that piece of it?
Yeah, you know, I think journalism should always be impactful. I think the lines that were drawn before about what is opinion, what is advocacy, what is proper and what is not, and this, you know, decades-old idea of journalists just being a fly on the wall and just saying the who, what, where, and when, without the why and what comes next, I think is really dated. I think the last several years, the last 4 or 5 years have really shown us what it means when journalism does not give the proper context, when it does not clearly delineate between right and wrong, what it means when it does not acknowledge that there is a common good that can be achieved, and certainly fighting against the inherent biases in our communities and in our systems, doing that is in the collective good. So I think it, you know, just like the tradition of these newspapers, I don't think this is taking, certainly don't think it's taking journalism in a negative direction, but certainly broadening the idea of what it can accomplish in a way that might, that many people today may not be used to.
Professor Kendi, do you think there will be a similar kind of conversation on the scholarship and research front?
Well, actually, I hope so. And indeed, I mean, one thing that happens with journalists is journalists are able to speak to, you know, whether through radio or whether through television or certainly through the written word, to everyday people. And scholars are more likely to be publishing in journals and university presses that regular everyday people may not be reading as much. And so for me to be able to work with scholars who can translate their incredibly important research and expertise on different aspects of racism, you know, we just have so many scholars who are studying the intricacies, you know, of racism and pointing the way forward with research-based sort of policy recommendations for their work to be before the American people in ways people can digest is really what excites me as well about The Emancipator.
I wanted to ask the two of you, The Emancipator will rely at least in part and maybe a lot, as I understand it, on private philanthropy, on private giving. I worked in the nonprofit sector for a very long time, and I think we all know that foundations and donors aren't necessarily comfortable putting a lot of funding into things that are on the bleeding edge, that really push the envelope and push boundaries or are not easily measurable. Will there be a tension there, and will it be a challenge to speak, I'll use my word, prophetically, in this set of publications and through these sets of tools, needing to rely on private philanthropy for support? Kimberly, maybe you first.
I don't think so. It shouldn't have to be. I mean, being an alum of public radio, I think there are a lot of things that are innovative and different that public radio stations and public television stations have done with their news, with their journalism, and they certainly rely on that same kind of philanthropy, as well as other ventures that we have seen move forward, like the 19th, the publication that is focused really toward women, women's role in our society, and giving women the information that they need in order to make decisions about the world. And that was groundbreaking in its time, and that's a public endeavor as well. I think when you have that buy-in from outside of the organization, it makes the work even more worthwhile, because you know that it is a joint effort. It's not about, you know, it's not about trying to profit or have that bottom line. It's about people really coming together, endeavoring for a common goal. And I think it's actually a benefit here.
Professor Kendi, is there anything you want to add to that?
I mean, I think Kim said it beautifully.
All right, so let's explore another piece here. And I don't know if either of you heard any of our conversation before the break, but we were talking about the experiences of the Asian American and Pacific Islander American communities, especially over the last year and in the wake of the shootings in Atlanta. And we were talking about the way our country has started to reckon with anti-Blackness and now other forms of racism. That's striking to me because slavery can't be separated from our history of anti-Blackness in America. And you are channeling the traditions of anti-slavery newspapers. On the other hand, Dr. Kendi, in reading your work, you've been clear that anti-racism efforts are not exclusively limited to one race. So in the balance of content, how do the two of you imagine the emancipator in the reporting and the scholarship in tackling anti-blackness, broader forms of racism? What is that balance there? How should we think about it? Professor Kendi, maybe you.
So I think one of the reasons why I'm also excited about the emancipator is indeed that I think through the writing and through the platform we hope to build, people are going to learn about and learn about even the debates and come to better understand different forms of racism. And so certainly I'm hopeful that we will certainly have writers who will be writing on anti-Black and anti-Native racism, which in many ways are foundational to this country's history, but also, you know, anti-Asian racism, also anti-Latinx racism, also even the ways in which racism can harm white people at times, you know, as Heather McGee has shown in her recent book, you know, The Sum of Us, or even the ways in which racism intersects with sexism and classism and homophobia and transphobia. I mean, there's so much ground that we can certainly cover in this, you know, in the Emancipator.
Kimberly, I know these are early days. You guys are still searching for two editors in chief, but I wonder, is there already a conversation you can't wait to have, or a story that you can't wait to do?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've been hard at work for months on this. I mean, one of the first things that I'm going to be looking into is racism in financial systems. You know, we've heard conversations over things like reparations. And I think for a lot of people, they sort of, you know, they pull away from that, and in part because they don't fully understand it, or they can't fully imagine what it might look like. You know, it could be something that is so much different than simply cutting a check. And it needs to be. It needs to be ways to really transform these systems so that they work for everyone. So those are the types of conversations I look forward to starting with this project.
We're going to look forward to engaging further with the two of you as you go along, too. We just heard Kimberly Atkins, senior opinion writer at the Boston Globe and inaugural columnist for The Emancipator, as well as Ibram X. Kendi, the founding director of the BU Center for Anti-Racist Research and bestselling author of How to Be an Anti-Racist. Thanks to both of you for coming on Radio Boston today.
Thank you so much, Ticia.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Professor Kendi. And that is our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Happy Monday. Thanks for listening. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.